It's Saturday, October 31st, 2015. Happy birthday to Cole Aldrich. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Sammy Philp. Make sure you are checking out Moneyball.com.au if you are in Australia or New Zealand and you are looking for some daily fantasy action, because Moneyball is the only game in town. So make sure you are checking that out. There are links on my site where you can sign up using those links and become a member and play me in the numerous Red Rock head-to-head and leagues that are going on Moneyball. And big thanks to Sammy Philp, who is the other sponsor of this podcast, for leaving a review on iTunes. And if you want to become a sponsor of the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, just like Sammy did. And thank you to everyone who's done that. I will be getting to you all over the coming few days, or the ones who are backed up there. So rest assured, you will be a sponsor of the podcast. And if you want to get a shout out on the show and become a sponsor of the show, just leave a review on iTunes. It is that simple. Now, the podcast a little bit later than usual today, and I've been informed by a couple of people that when watching the video live on YouTube, that the audio is a bit choppy. I don't know what that is. I'm doing my best to make it a little bit, a bit clearer. We'll see how we go. Hopefully it does the trick. I've adjusted a couple of settings and. Well, remains to be seen, but obviously if you listen to the audio version of the podcast, which you can find on iTunes, the audio is hopefully crystal clear. But on YouTube, there has been a couple of issues of it dropping in and out. Hopefully we've rectified that today. If not, I am sure that you will let me know, and that sort of feedback is always very welcome to know what needs to be changed and what needs to be addressed. So thank you to everyone who has pointed me out those little things, not in a mean way. And if you want to be in a mean way, that's fine, but just it's very constructive. So thank you very much for those people who have done that. Now, there was I always start off the podcast with the monstrous line of the night. There were some monstrous lines in today's games, or yesterday's games, however you're listening to this, but there was 12 games on Friday. There was huge performances from lots of people. But who's the monstrous line of the night? Well, the monstrous line of the night goes to Kevin Durant. And could have given it to his teammate, could have given it to Victor Oladipo in the same game, but I went with Durant. He had 43 points in a whopping 54 minutes. He hit 3 threes, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 2 blocks. And part of the reason that he gets the monstrous line of the night is he went 15 from 30 from the field. So not only is that above average, but it's on huge volume. And then 10 of 11 from the free throw line. So big positives in those categories. Huge scoring, obviously. It's great to see Durant getting those numbers back. We saw in the first game he looked okay. He scored well. Not many other peripheral numbers, but it's good to see him getting the 2 assists, the steal, the 2 blocks there. So that definitely helps his value as well. So good to have Kevin Durant back back winning the monstrous line of the night. We all know who Kevin Durant is. And, you know, I was a little bit down on him in the preseason, just that I didn't want to take a risk on him in the top three. He could very easily finish the season as a top three fantasy guy, as a top two, as the best fantasy player. But my whole point of avoiding him is that I didn't like the risk. And yes, if I picked him at 5 and he ends up at 1, is it that big of a difference? Whereas if I pick him at 3 and he has an issue with the foot and he ends up at 40, that's a bigger problem to me. That loses you a season. You know, picking someone at 5 and getting them to 1 doesn't necessarily win you a season. So that was why I was a little bit hesitant on Durant, if people are still wondering. But he looked great there. Fantastic game from the Thunder. And I think the biggest, we'll talk about it a little bit later, the biggest takeaway from that game is how good Orlando's looked. In both games, they've been narrowly pipped. They're 0-2, but they've been narrowly pipped by the Thunder and the Wizards, and they've taken it to them, and they've looked really, really good. But we'll cover that in a little bit. The next one we'll look at is the waiver wire line of the night. And this is a guy who gets, I'm not going to say he gets no love, because he gets the opposite of love, and that is Nick Young from the Los Angeles Lakers. Young played 22 minutes off the bench. He had 17 points. He hit 3 threes. He had 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and for Nick Young, 3 assists is like someone else dropping 20. 3 steals, really good percentages. I don't know what to make of Nick Young, because he started the season off really well. He's only playing 20 minutes a game, but he's at 15.5 points and 3.5 threes, 1.5 steals. you know, shooting 53% from the field, hasn't missed a free throw yet. His numbers are really, really good. He's not going to be able to continue this rate. He's not going to continue to shoot 53% from the field. I think we're pretty confident of that. He's not going to shoot 50% from three, which he's currently doing, but he's providing value in limited minutes. And at the moment, with what he's doing and the way that he's playing, he's a really interesting stream option. I'm not adding him in any 10 or 12 team leagues as a permanent long-term fixture. In a 14 team league, yeah, I'll have a look at him and go, if I can get 15 points and two threes off a waiver wire guy, that's pretty useful. But for now, he's a, sort of a streaming option in a similar vein to CJ Miles from yesterday's show. I think Miles is probably the better long-term option than Nick Young, but Young, in limited minutes, is doing exactly what he should do in this role, and it's really good to see from a... I'm not a massive Nick Young hater, as a lot of people are, but it's good to see him, you know, fitting into this role. And we heard talk that maybe his relationship with Byron Scott had improved over the offseason. Hopefully it has, and hopefully he continues to get a pretty decent role. I thought he'd be almost eliminated from the rotation, but that's clearly not the case. So that's good for Nick, and it's good for fantasy owners who can utilize now the talents that he does bring. The young gun of the night goes to none other than the number one overall draft pick, Karl Anthony Towns, who has his second double-double in as many games. He played 33 minutes and went 28-14, two assists, four blocks. Your big shooting numbers, 11 of 19 from the field, 6 of 7 from the free throw line. We knew he was going to be good at some point in his career. I've talked it up millions of times that by, you know, year three, he'll be a top 10 player in fantasy. If the way he keeps going now, he could be top 20 next year. He could be pushing top 10 by the end of next season. He is putting up some fantastic numbers. There are going to be struggles. He's going to have some off nights. He's a rookie, but he is a very, very special player. And we're seeing that here in Minnesota with the double-doubles, yeah, the big scoring performances from Towns here, yeah, the great shooting numbers, the block numbers. It's going to be fun watching this Wolves team play through the season. They had another big win. They're obviously riding high on some youthful exuberance. They played the Lakers and the Nuggets. Let's not get too excited, but for them to start off 2-0 is obviously massive. They're going to be riding some sort of emotional wave as well after the passing of Flip Saunders. But for now, if you're a Wolves fan, enjoy it. Enjoy watching these young players develop, because it is going to be a pretty fun ride for this season and seasons to come. I'm pretty confident they're going to be a good team. On to the other side of things, the dud of the night. A player who didn't perform up to scratch, and that's Julius Randle of the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, some people might think it's a bit hard to give it to Randle as a guy who's basically a rookie, but he's owned in about over 75% of leagues. So if you're owned in 75% of leagues and you put up a line of 3 points, two rebounds, and one assist on 1 of 4 shooting from the field and from the free throw line, well, you get the dud of the night. It's a really poor performance from Randle, and this is part of the reason why I was down on him coming into the season. Yeah, he had a big game in the first game, but he is basically just a points and rebounds guy. He's going to hurt in percentages. He's not going to provide defensive numbers. He's not going to hit threes. He's not going to get assists, really. He had 5 turnovers as well. So just a horrific, horrific performance from Julius Randle. And to me, he is a borderline 10-team league guy. I think you probably still need to own him, but he's not someone that I'm holding on to. If there's someone hot that's out there on the waiver wire and I need to grab them, yeah, at this point, I'd rather have Marcus Morris than Julius Randle. He feels, as enticing as he is as a player, he feels very limited from a fantasy point of view. So we'll see how it all plays out, obviously, throughout the season. But this is, you know, we've seen extremes from Randle. A good first game and a horrible second game. Let's see how it all pans out. But I didn't have very high hopes for him heading into the season. All right, that's all the nightly awards done. Let's now talk about these games in a little bit more detail. The first one we're going to look at is the Utah Jazz and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Jazz, they just thumped the Sixers. The Sixers have been horrible to start the season. They are dealing with a stack of injuries, and that's fair enough. But the Jazz big men just destroyed the Sixers. Rudy Gobert, 6 blocks. That's fantastic. 11 rebounds, that's also good. But the problems are still there with him in terms of he only had 8 points, and you did need to really draft specifically around him with those points. And he's great in a punt point situation. He'll hit both his free throws, so that's a bit of a bonus given what we saw in preseason. But you know, the blocks are going to be huge, the rebounds are going to be pretty good, but the points are going to be a problem. You've drafted now, you deal with it, just don't expect him to become a 14-15 point scorer. Derek Favors, on the other hand, has taken another step forward. A 20-12 game here, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He shot the ball a stack, but he is quickly becoming the number one option on this team, which I think a lot of people were a little bit surprised at. He went 6 of 17 from the field, which is not something you expect from him. He also went 8 of 10 from the line, which is another thing you don't expect from him. You don't expect him to be that proficient from the line or get to the line that many times. But we're seeing a bit of a different Derek Favors this season. He is really starting to break out. The guard situation is a bit of a mess. Raul Neto started and played 21 minutes, 7 points, 3 assists, 3 steals. Trey Burke played 27 minutes off the bench, 10, 3, and 6. A bit of a reversal from the first game where Burke was buried. Neto and Burke, I don't think we want anything to do with those guys in standard leagues. Where the value is the shooting guard position. Alec Burks off the bench had 15 and 7 with a 3, and Rodney Hood chimed in with 17 points and 3 threes in his 23 minutes. But even then, these guys are... the most minutes was played by Trey Burke at 27 between those four guys. Hood and Burks are end-of-the-bench 10 and 12 team league options. Burke and Neto, they can fit specific needs for your team, but they're not guys that you necessarily have to hold on to. Let's just wait and see how it all plays out, but with the way that the Jazz are going with these guys and the way that these guys are playing, I can't see much changing, and I can't see many situations where it's going to be, okay, unless there's an injury, of course, or is Burks going to now play 35 minutes? Is Hood going to play 35 minutes? That sort of stuff seems a little bit unlikely to me. On to the Sixers. Nerlens Noel, 8 points on some horrible shooting, 2 of 12, 4 of 4 from the line, so that's a bit of an improvement there. 8 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks, so he sort of did what he needed to do. And Jahlil Okafor had a dramatic drop back to earth. He went 10 and 6, 4 of 12 shooting from the field, 2 of 4 from the line, and that's probably more like to what we can expect rather than the 6 of 6 from the line he had in the first game and the 65% from the field. Those sort of numbers, they're just not realistic for a rookie to continue. So Okafor, he still played 36 minutes. Noel played 36 minutes. They're going to run these big guys a stack, but don't expect consistent performances. Isaiah Cannon, 10 and 5 with a 3. Not a great night for him. 1 of 9 shooting. And TJ McConnell off the bench, he just had 2 points with 4 assists and 2 steals. McConnell, still not someone I want to look at in standard leagues. Cannon is borderline for points and threes. Really depends on how you structure your team. Nick Stauskas was back. He played 21 minutes after the back issue. 12, 3, and 2 with 2 threes. A good night. He's going to get better, but I doubt he's ever going to be a great option. He's worth looking at in a 12-team league just to see how he does, because this team is clearly calling out for someone to take the reins on the wing, and maybe it's him. Maybe he plays 30 minutes in the next game and starts putting up some big numbers, so he's worth a look in that sort of respect, but I don't know how much he's going to be able to hold on to a big role or a big fantasy role. Jeremy Grant, 25 minutes, 12 and 5 with 2 blocks. That's okay, but it's not worth getting too excited about. Neither is Hollis Thompson or Jakarr Sampson. The next game is that big game that I talked about earlier, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Orlando Magic. Touched on Durant's big line. Well, Russell Westbrook narrowly missed a triple-double. He went 48, 11, and 8 with a triple one on big volumes as well. He went 17 of 36, 36 shots. Durant and Westbrook took 66 shots combined. They took 27 free throw attempts combined as well. And Westbrook also had 6 turnovers, but you know you're going to get big turnovers from Westbrook, but that's still a huge performance. The thing is that only 2 other Thunder players scored in double digits, so they were obviously heavily reliant on those 2 guys. They got the victory. It went to double overtime. They're going to be really hard to stop offensively, and it's going to run through those 2 guys. We know what they are at this point. There's a case to be made that Westbrook is close to the best player in the league. Some will say, Durant's still better than him, but he is phenomenal. He's put up some really, really big numbers. Now, you look at the Thunder box score. Enes Kanter played just 18 minutes. He fouled out in those 18 minutes, so 10 and 6 with a block. Don't read a huge amount into that. Serge Ibaka, people were a little bit disappointed with what we saw from Ibaka, but the Thunder needed to come back in this game, so they did go quite small, and that limited Ibaka to only 33 minutes. Now, that seems like it's still pretty good. In a double overtime game, it's not fantastic. He was 8 and 12 with a steal and 2 blocks. He started off pretty poor this season. I think he gets better. I hope he gets a lot better, but I'd be looking at maybe a buy low target on him and see if you can get someone outside the top 50 for him. It's a possibility. Steve Adams played 36 minutes, 9 and 8. 2 steals, 2 blocks is where his value came in, though. It's still borderline for most standard leagues. And the other numbers are inflated by the fact that this game was a double overtime game. Except Andre Robertson, who went scoreless in his 19 minutes. And he is a complete non-factor in fantasy. Like, complete non-factor. Onto the Magic. Victor Oladipo had the first triple-double of the season. 21, 13 and 10. 3 threes, 3 steals, 1 block. Destroyed your field goal percentage, 8 of 27, and that's bad. That's clearly bad, but he was a guy that I was massively high on this offseason. Big performance from him there. Toby Harris went 30 and 9. Nice night from him. Lord Alfred Payton, 14, 3 and 5 with a couple of threes. And the fact that he hit a couple of threes is the most surprising part here. But there's lots of surprising things with this Magic team. Nick Vucevic, I talked about at length over the preseason, is that I've got a real sneaky feeling that Nick Vucevic is going to start adding blocks to his game. He had 5 of them in this game. He went 26 and 7 with a steal and 5 blocks. Really good percentages. He is creeping up to be a top 20, maybe top 15 player if he can actually start blocking shots. That's 2 games in a row where he's had blocks now. It's not. I think last season he averaged 0.7 blocks. Not a good amount for a center, but if he's going to get big nights like this and look more engaged in that, and much like the jump we saw from Jonas Valanciunas last year, he becomes a superb fantasy guy. Great percentages, big scoring, big rebounding. A really interesting player to look at. Evan Fournier played 45 minutes here, 22 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 threes. Yeah, that's great. They're good numbers. He took the second most shots on the team as well, which is something to bear in mind. But I'm not looking at him in 10-team leagues. In a 12-team league, yeah, I would maybe have a look, but it depends who you're dropping. But what it means is that guys like Mario Hezonja and Aaron Gordon are falling behind Fournier in the rotation. Gordon played just 18 minutes. He scored 15 points and had a steal and a block, so that's pretty good. Hezonja played just 14 minutes. Hezonja's going to be better than this in a lot of games. He's going to be similar to this in a lot of games as well, though, so I don't want him in standard leagues. I know guys like Mark Roberts are really high on Hezonja. I just don't want to deal with the rookie headache with Scott Skiles as the coach, with his up-and-down performances. He will probably be good at some point, but the limits to him in terms of his minutes are going to be a problem to me, especially if they're going to run with Fournier, and Fournier is looking as impressive as he has. And you know I'm a huge Fournier fan, so it's good for me to see him out there doing these sort of things because I know he's got the ability to do it. I'm still not grabbing Fournier, but to me it just means that let's just slow our excitement on Mario Hezonja a little bit. The next game we have a look at, the Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Sorry I keep blinking on this video. Something is in my eye and it's itching me, so I apologize about that. The Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dwayne Wade, 25, 4, 3, 2 steals, 1 block, 1 3, a full line from him. We know what he can do when he's healthy. The health is always the issue. And Hassan Whiteside bounced back, 11 and 9 with 6 blocks, actually went 3 of 4 from the free throw line and played 36 minutes. So a much better performance than opening night, but you're going to get that with him. You're going to get oscillating performances, big nights, really bad nights. You have to expect that from him. Chris Bosh was solid, 16 and 5. Goran Dragic continues to struggle, 11, 3 and 6, which the 6 assists is nice, but he's just doesn't look right playing alongside Dwayne Wade. I think that you have to throw a buy low offer at him. And by low, I mean outside the top 100, because there's a chance that he finishes in the 80s or 90s. I would be looking to throw my worst player an offer, maybe package my 2 worst players for Dragic, see if someone bites there. But I'm not going to be banking on him becoming a top 40 guy and go, yeah, I'll throw you my 70th ranked player for Dragic as a buy low, because it might end up that Dragic actually ends up ranked worse than that. So if you're going to go low, go really low. The bench provides nothing here. As good as these guys are, they provide nothing for fantasy in general. Gerald Green played 16 minutes, and that's the problem you're going to get with him as well. He played 30 in the opening night, but now 16 here for 5 points. And if you rostered him, not only did he not provide any counting stats, he went 1 of 9 from the field, so he hurt you in field goal percentage. So Gerald Green is going to have that issue as well. To me, he's not a lock for standard leagues. Yes, you can own him in certain places, but expect some bad performances. Justice Winslow shouldn't be touched in 12-team leagues. Neither should Amari Stoudemire, obviously Josh McRoberts. None of those guys really have much of a role. Onto the Cavs, Kevin Love is cooking at the moment. 24 and 14, 3 threes and 5 assists. That's a Minnesota Kevin Love type of line. We heard the talk coming out. They want to focus on him a lot, and they are. He's looked really good in the first 3 games. LeBron went 29, 5 and 4, and he also said before the game that he wants to play in all 82 games this season. And to that I say, good luck, LeBron. There is zero chance that he plays 82 games this season. I'm banking on it now. Next minute, he plays 82 games. But I think there's very little chance of that. Matthew Dellavedova had 10 assists. Let's not get too excited about Matthew Dellavedova and the fact that he played 27 minutes versus Mo Williams as 26. Yes, Dellavedova, yeah, he's scrappy at times. He's not going to hand out 10 assists regularly. Williams is still going to be the better guy, so he's still a guy to hold on to. The center position, though, is a mess. Timofey Mozgov, a mess from a fantasy point of view. Mozgov started, played 18 minutes, went 9-5. Thompson played 26 minutes off the bench, went 13-9 with a block. Andy Varejao chipped in with 16 minutes and went 2-8. Mozgov, to me, with the way that his minutes have been limited, I reckon you can do better in most sort of 12-team formats. I don't think that he is necessarily a must-own. At this point, I'd rather the spot for streaming. it doesn't mean I want to add Tristan Thompson in those sort of situations. He's a deeper sort of league. And I want to get you guys' opinion on this. I was commenting on a thread on the Basketball Monster Forum. Someone's in a 20-team league and Tristan Thompson was dropped onto the waiver wire and they want to know whether they should use their number one waiver priority on Thompson. I said yes. I don't value number one waiver priority that highly. In a 20-team league, you're talking about 260 players rostered. Thompson could be the 160th ranked player. That's mid-round value. I don't think you're going to get many other guys appear on the waiver wire at that sort of value. So I want to hear other guys' opinions. Would you use your number one waiver priority on a league that deep for Tristan Thompson? Or would you rather hold on to it and then hope that he gets through to free agency? I think there's zero chance he gets through to free agency. I could be proven wrong, but if I'm in a league that deep and Tristan Thompson's available, he's clearly a top 200 player. For as bad as he is, in that sort of league, he's a mid-range talent. So I think you need to pay attention there. J.R. Smith was horrible, 22 minutes for 2 points and a block. You still need to ride him out for the next month or so, at least until Shumpert and Irving come back. But it's clearly not a good performance from J.R. Smith. The next game up is the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons. And my note there you can see on the screen says Andre Drummond is an animal. He's an animal. But we'll talk about the Bulls first. Nikola Mirotic, he's close to an animal too. Now, this game was an overtime game, so the minutes are a little bit inflated. But Mirotic played 39 minutes, second most on the Chicago team, 22-6, two steals, three threes. If anyone is doubtful on Mirotic's role in this team, or his role in the rotation, or the fact that he's going to get minutes, surely it is a race by now. I was really aggressive on my rankings for him this preseason. It's looking good so far. I'm loving the way that they're using him. Pau Gasol played 32 minutes, 16-12 with two steals and three blocks after a real dud start to the season. Two big games after that. Joakim Noah, he scored his first points of the season. He's on 2 points for the season in three games. Only 17 minutes. To me, in a 10-team league, I don't think you can roster Joakim Noah. 12-team league, it feels like his role is pretty solid at the moment in terms of you're getting 17 minutes a night and you're playing off the bench. And that's not useful for 12-team leagues. I reckon, again, you never just drop someone. I'm never just going to say, yeah, you need to drop Joakim Noah and then have no one to pick up. He might be your first cab off the rank. So when someone is there to pick up, your Noah can go. But it's never a case of, I am dropping Joakim Noah. It is, I am adding Marcus Morris. Do I drop Joakim Noah? That sort of thing. Because there needs to be someone to replace him. You're never just going to drop him and let him and leave the roster spot open. You're replacing him with someone. Is that person better? Is that person worse? We need to have a look at that with each individual situation. Taj Gibson is not worth rostering either. Even though he did chime in with 7 rebounds and 3 blocks in his 20 minutes, that's deeper league stuff. The Tony Snell, Doug McDermott timeshare at small forward. Tony Snell is just not good. 30 minutes, 4 points. There's no place for him in leagues. And Doug McDermott's only got 15 minutes here. He's been okay, but you can't roster him in 12-team leagues. Probably even 14-team leagues is a little bit of a stretch. Derrick Rose struggled, 8 points and 6 assists. You're going to get those nights from Rose. On to the Pistons. I mentioned Andre Drummond, 20-20 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Yes, he was 4 of 10 from the free throw line. But if you drafted him, you know this and you deal with it. Everything else for him, the field goal percentage is not good either, but those counting stats, those rebound numbers, 9 offensive rebounds, if you're counting that stat, that's fantastic as well. 2 steals, 2 blocks. He's off to a tremendous start. Reggie Jackson had his best game, 22-7-7 with a couple of steals and a 3. Anytime you get steals and 3s out of Reggie Jackson, consider it a bonus because it's not something that he does very often. And Marcus Morris played 42 minutes and went 26-7. He's not going to shoot at 10 of 15 every time, but he's hot at the moment. And for now, I think Marcus Morris is pretty much a must own. And if he's sitting on a waiver wire in a 12-team league, I reckon you've got to make the move to get him. Stanley Johnson, not a must own guy at this point, unless you're just in a weekly sort of lock situation where you can ride him on the bench. 12 minutes for him today, 7-4. They're clearly going with Morris over Johnson. Ilyasova played 22 minutes. And Anthony Tolliver played 30 minutes. So there's other guys in contention for those minutes too. Now, the fact that Tolliver played 30 and Ilyasova played 22, I'm not reading a huge amount into it at this point, but it does have an impact on Ilyasova. Ilyasova was great in game one when Tolliver was out. Tolliver's been back the last two games. Ilyasova's minutes have been cut back. So let's just monitor that over the next few games. It doesn't mean that we're adding Tolliver, but it could mean that Ilyasova might become expendable. With Jody Meeks out with that Jones fracture until January, most likely, Reggie Bullock took his role and basically filled in the exact same way that Jody Meeks did by providing 0 points and 2 rebounds. There is nothing to see with that position. the Toronto Raptors and the Boston Celtics. Well, Damari Carroll, playoff Damari Carroll, reared his head for the Raptors. He went 21, 4 threes, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. That's huge for him. And he's got he's playing big minutes, another 35 here after 40-odd the day before. A big part of this offense, which is, it's great to see. And we know what sort of stats he can provide. That's fantastic. Kyle Lowry was awesome as well. 14, 7, and 9, 3 steals and 2 blocks. And DeMar DeRozan, 23, 7, and 6, 2 steals and a 3. What is going on with DeMar DeRozan? He's putting up sort of these peripheral stats you don't expect for him. And he's returning top 50 value very, very easily. Now, it could drop off pretty quickly. But so far, it looks like a completely different DeMar DeRozan. The power forward spot we're still avoiding. 9-9 to Scola in the start. Patrick Patterson went 8-0 with a couple of threes. Can't use any of that. Corey Joseph had his minutes drop from 27 to 18 and didn't provide anything really usable. He's not on the standard league radar. And Jonas Valanciunas, disappointing to me. He only played 23 minutes. Now, there were some foul issues there. And he did play in the fourth quarter, which is great. He played, I think, 6 minutes in the fourth quarter. And that's good to see. But 23 overall is a little bit discouraging after such a monstrous first night. 6-10 with a couple of assists. There'll be better nights in Jonas Valanciunas' future. On to Boston, and the Boston front court is disgusting. Nobody played over 20 minutes. Amir Johnson with 19, David Lee with 17, Kelly Olynyk with 17, Jared Sullinger with 14, Tyler Zeller with 16, Jonas Jerebko with 8. So at the start of the season, David Lee and Tyler Zeller are our starters. We're going to run a lot through Lee. That's what we did in the preseason. Yep, okay. Olynyk and Amir Johnson are our backups, and Jerebko and Sullinger are out of the rotation. Next minute, they're all playing the same minutes. At this point, it is really hard to recommend holding on to any of these guys. Let's give it one more game, but if you own Lee, Sullinger has no place in a 12-team league, you can move on from him. Olynyk doesn't either. Zeller probably doesn't at this point. Lee's the only one I'm just waiting one more game to see. Same with Amir Johnson. And Amir Johnson was good in 19 minutes, 11-8 with 2 steals and a 3. But if he's getting 19 minutes a game, you can't do anything with that. You need to just sort of cut bait if that is the way it's going to run. But let's see what happens over the next game. But early signs have not been encouraging. The value on the Celtics comes from their guards. Isaiah Thomas went 25 with 7 assists and 2 steals. Avery Bradley, 13, 5, and 3 with 3 triples. And Marcus Smart, he struggled with his shooting. Just 6 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. So it still helped a little bit. And all those guys obviously have standard league value, with Thomas the best, Smart probably next, and Bradley as that back-end guy. Evan Turner's not getting anything done this season, so if he's owned in a 12-team league, you can probably find a better option than him. Whereas Jay Crowder went 7-4-4 with 3 steals and a block. And again, I'm still not sold on him being a great fantasy option for most formats. The Hornets and the Hawks. The Hornets, Nick Batum, 14-11, 4 assists. A nice night from him, good bounce back. But I think the story for Charlotte is Marvin Williams playing big minutes again. 36 minutes, he went 13-12 with 3 threes and a block. We've seen Marvin Williams start off hot before many times. He is not a great player, but they're running him out there big minutes. So if you're desperate for a big man who hits threes and gets rebounds, then Marvin Williams is not the worst option. He's close to the worst option, but he's not the worst option. And while they're doing this with him, you need to pay attention to it. It is probably only going to be short-term value there, and I'm definitely not dropping anyone of value. But bear in mind that he's had big rebounding games. He hits threes. He's had big minutes in the first two games. He's someone to look out for. Jeremy Lin had 12-4-4. That's about what we expect from him. And Jeremy Lamb played his first game, regular season game, in a Hornets uniform. He went 11 points with 3 threes. He's not worth owning. Good to see Al Jefferson back at 30 minutes. 10-11 and 2 blocks is not a overwhelmingly good performance, but for him to get 30 minutes, that's great. And Kemba Walker went 13-4-6 in his typically inefficient shooting. Cody Zeller, 17 minutes. Nothing to see there. PJ Harrison as a starter played 17 minutes. Also nothing to see there. And if you picked up Frank Kaminsky in a 12-team draft, he's done for the time being. He's not getting anything happening. It might change, but we're not holding on to him. Onto the Hawks, Paul Millsap continues to be a fantasy star. He had a Richie Beno, which is 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, 18-10 with 4 assists. He's had a great start to the season, and so is Al Horford, who hit another 2 three-pointers. I'm probably going to have to look at updating his projection. I think I've got him projected at half a 3 a game after him being at 0.1 the last 3 seasons. I thought, okay, that's a fair bump. He's going at about 1.5 threes a game at the moment, Al Horford. He went 18-6 here, and he is absolutely on fire from a fantasy point of view. Kyle Korver set this one out with his ankle, and they put Dennis Schroeder into the starting lineup alongside Jeff Teague. 14-5 with 2 assists and 2 steals for Schroeder. So an okay night, but a little bit underwhelming. And Jeff Teague went 14-1-4, so definitely not the same Jeff Teague that we saw against the Knicks. Schroeder's someone that I was still holding onto in 12-team leagues, but he's just as liable to go out in the next game and play 18 minutes and have 10 points. There is fluctuation for him. Now, Kent Bazemore had his best game, 19-9 with 4 threes. Please don't get sucked in. Kent Bazemore's not good. Thabo had 2 steals. Lamar Patterson had 2 steals. And Lamar Patterson keeps on getting minutes. So if you're in a deep league, a 20-team league, Lamar Patterson is possibly around on the waiver wire. That's 20 minutes each game. Tim Hardaway is not getting off the bench for this team. Patterson is clearly playing above Justin Holiday. He's someone that you need to have a look at. Now, 3 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals. He's not great, but he can hit some threes. He can do a little better in the scoring category. Deep league guys need to have a look at Lamar Patterson. The Hawks were also without Mike Muscala in this game, and he's likely out for the next game with that ankle problem. The next game up is the Washington Wizards and the Milwaukee Bucks. John Wall couldn't get 5 blocks again, but still went 19-10 with 2 steals and a block. And Brad Beal had his best game, 26 points with 5 triples, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists. Brad Beal is not going to shoot 9 of 16 very often and 56%, so don't bank on that, but he's going to have big games. I think the guy that's not going to have big games very often is Ramon Sessions, who dropped 23 points, including a couple of threes. Amazingly, no rebounds and no assists, and we don't care about Ramon Sessions. What we do care is Jared Dudley played. He played 25 minutes, and he was preferred down the stretch to Chris Humphries, who just got 14 minutes. So Chris Humphries was a guy that, you know, when he was getting 28 minutes and hitting threes and being a rebounding threat, then you need to look at him for standard leagues. If they're going to run this lineup, which you'd have to think that that's something that they are going to look at it on occasions, and probably more than occasions, then Humphries becomes useless at 14 minutes a game. Let's see what happens in the next one. And again, we're not adding Jared Dudley in that case, but Humphries might become expendable in that point. Otto Porter had a triple one, a little bit underwhelming in other areas, 6, 4, and 3. He's still worthwhile in a 12-team league, and a quiet night from Marcin Gortat, going 9-9. Giannis Antetokounmpo made his debut for the Bucks after serving a 1-game suspension, 27-9 with 3 steals and a 3. He was red hot in the offseason. Everybody was talking him up. Giannis is going to be a top 40 player, all that sort of stuff. He had a very, very underwhelming preseason, and that sort of cooled off the hype a bit. He started off red hot here. Throw out some trades if you've got him. Try and get a top 30 player back. I would be shocked if Giannis was a top 30 player by the end of the year. See if you can get something. Gordon Hayward struggled again. Get Gordon Hayward back for Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm going to keep using Gordon Hayward as an example. People buy into the hype on Giannis Antetokounmpo a lot, and I always sound like I'm hating him. I really like Giannis a lot, but he just always gets overpriced by people's opinions on him. This is a great start, but is it really going to continue? Is he going to shoot 9 of 15 from the field? Is he going to go 27-9? I think that's probably a little bit unlikely. Michael Carter-Williams was good, 13-6-11, a 3, a steal, and 2 blocks. Also didn't take a free throw, which actually helps if he does that. Greg Monroe, 22-5 with 2 steals. Again, the steals continue for Monroe. And Chris Middleton had his best game, so that's good to see. 18-3-5. Johnny O'Brien played 28 minutes. 9 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. I'm just never going to understand Johnny O'Brien playing. Yes, I know Jabari Parker's out. I know John Henson's out. But surely you put Giannis at the 4. Surely then you give more minutes to Gravis Vasquez. Vasquez played 17, O'Brien played 28. We don't have to deal with Johnny O'Brien from fantasy, but it's a pain in the ass. It's also a bit annoying to me that Jared Bayless played 27 minutes. He went 14 points with 4 assists and a couple of threes, and that's 2 pretty big games from Bayless in terms of his minute output. We'll have to monitor that how it goes, but if he's giving you 14-4 every night, then that's valuable in pretty much every league. It's very unlikely that he continues that. But let's just monitor to see the way that Jason Kidd uses it. Now, the return of OJ Mayo will probably impact him. The fact that Rashard Vaughn didn't get any minutes, and he will likely start to see some minutes at some point this season. And if Damian Inglis continues to progress, that might cut into Bayless's time. But for now, let's just see how it happens. Because if he's playing 27 minutes and chipping in double-digit points, we can't ignore it. That's probably the best way of saying it. Don't have much to talk about in the Brooklyn Nets-San Antonio Spurs game. The Nets are terrible. They got destroyed. Jarrett Jack returned 12 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 threes and a steal. I can't stand Jarrett Jack, but if he's on your waiver wire for some reason, he has to be owned. He's going to rack up big numbers this season, relatively big numbers for how good he is. You need to pay attention to him. We also need to pay attention to Joe Johnson, who has been terrible. 2 points, two rebounds, an assist, and a steal. He only played 25 minutes. He's not droppable yet, but he's edging towards that category, especially with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson playing 26 minutes, taking some of those minutes away from Joe Johnson. RHJ had 10 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 blocks. He's probably not a standard league relevant guy now, but he could make a guy like Joe Johnson not become relevant. Don't like the fact that Wayne Ellington continues to start. Bojan Bogdanovic, 20 minutes for 6 points, not a good night from him either. Onto the Spurs. Kawhi, another 16 and 10 with 2 steals and a block. LaMarcus Aldridge, 10 and 11 with a block. I would say buy low on LaMarcus Aldridge, but I actually don't think that he's going to be massively better than this throughout the season. So if you're going to buy low, you need to go real low, because I don't think that he's a top 20 player. I never thought he really was in Portland, and I definitely don't think he is now. And Tony Parker, 10 points and 4 assists in 24 minutes. Hard to judge the minutes in this game because it was such a blowout, but he hasn't looked good over the summer. He hasn't looked good to start this season. We could be talking in 2 weeks' time that Tony Parker is a guy that has no real place of sticking on standard league rosters. Tim Duncan continues to be great though, 15 and 8 for him in 29 minutes. The next game up on the schedule was the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. We talked about Towns, and Ricky Rubio wasn't able to continue his hot shooting, shockingly enough, but he got to the line 9 times, went 8 of 9, 12, 5 and 8 in a steal is still really, really good from Rubio. So don't be too discouraged by the drop-off in field goal percentage. You know he's going to be a bad field goal guy, but the fact that he goes 12, 5, and 8 is really, really useful. So great, great stuff from Ricky Rubio. Again, Zach LaVine, I'll reiterate, if you own him in a 12-team league, please don't. 10, 4, and 3 for him in a backup point guard role in 18 minutes. Andrew Wiggins got it going a little bit, 18 and 4, but he doesn't do enough. 1 assist, 1 block. He doesn't do enough for the people who took him inside the top 50 or top 40. He's fine if you took him around pick 90 or pick 100. I think that's fine. And we talk about guys like DeMar DeRozan being empty players. At this point, I would much rather have DeRozan over Wiggins. And I'm sure there's going to be many people who disagree with me. But Wiggins is just a guy who underwhelms me from a fantasy point of view. The fact that Tayshaun Prince plays 29 minutes, underwhelming is not actually the word that I want to use. It is frustrating as hell that Tayshaun Prince is playing 29 minutes. That in turn is limiting what Shabazz Muhammad can do. It is limiting what Gorgui Dieng can do. Because Dieng played just 13 minutes, 2 points and a rebound. I'm getting so many questions about Dieng. Do I drop him? Do I drop him? He's edging really close to that. I'm probably not doing it just yet. But if they're going to continue to run this bullshit lineup of Garnett and Prince out there playing big minutes, limiting Dieng to these 13 or 15 minute nights, you can't hold on to him. But let's just wait and see for a couple more games how it plays out. Nemanja Bjelica played 26 minutes off the bench. He is the first sub in basically each night, replacing Garnett, sort of leapfrogging Dieng in the rotation. I'm not necessarily adding him in a 12-team league, but if there's a spot there and you wanted to see how it plays out, he could very easily have 12-team value by the end of the year. Now, he played 26 minutes, but he took 2 shots, so not all that involved, especially when Wiggins and Towns are taking so many of the shots. But he's a guy definitely to keep an eye on. Kevin Martin played 21 minutes off the bench, 14 points, but again, he's not a must-own sort of player. Onto the Nuggets, Emmanuel Mudiay had a Richie Beno as well, 15 points, but he had 2 threes, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. A really inefficient night, and that's what we expect from him. He went 5 of 15 from the field, he went 3 of 6 from the free throw line. His best shooting actually was from 3, where he went 2 of 5. He had 4 turnovers, so he cut down from the 11 he had on opening night. He's going to be a really good player for most of this season. The Nuggets in this game, they were blown out, so the minutes were spread a little bit. Interestingly to me, Nikola Jokic played 18 minutes, Joffrey Lavernier 16. Jokic went 10 and 9, Lavernier 10 and 5. I think if you're still owning one of the minutes in a standard league, it's Lavernier. But by no means is he a must-own player, and I'm going to stick with it that Jokic is the better player. I think that at some point that he will, at least until Nurkic comes back, that Jokic will start to get more minutes than Lavernier. on a more consistent basis. Now, Darrell Arthur getting 26 minutes makes me upset. I'd rather them give it to Jokic and Lavernier. We don't want to deal with Arthur in any fantasy formats. Gary Harris got the start, but he was outplayed by Will Barton. 18 minutes for Harris. If you did pick him up, just hold on to him and see how it goes. He still got you that steal, which is where the value is going to come from for him this season. The next game up on the slate was the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. Steph Curry, 25-7-6 and 4 threes in 27 minutes. That's business as usual for Steph. Draymond, 9-7-7 with 2 steals, a block and a 3. Business as usual for him. Klay Thompson has really come out sluggishly. He's dealing with a bit of a back complaint. He only played 24 minutes because he didn't have to play anymore. 11 points. It's 2 underwhelming performances from Thompson. He will crank it up. That is a serious buy low option there. If people are going, maybe it was a fluke last year, maybe there's something not right with him, go low, because he is a top 15 talent here. He's just played limited minutes. He's dealing with a bit of a back issue. It's going to come for him. Festus Ezeli started in place of Andrew Bogut. He did basically what we expected, 9-7 with 2 blocks. So if you picked Festus Ezeli up, you picked him up so he could get rebounds and blocks, and he delivered. Nothing more to see there with him. Leandro Barbosa, 5 points and 3 steals. He's a deep league target, nothing to get too excited. But Andre Iguodala is someone you need to pay attention to in a deeper 12 format or a 14-team league. 12-6-4, he played 30 minutes, 2 threes, 2 steals. He's looking pretty good this season. I think that he's going to be a guy who's going to be on and off of waiver wires pretty much the whole season. So just keep an eye on him. James Harden for the Houston Rockets, disappointing. 16-5-7-5. With a 1-1, again, that's disappointing for James Harden. It's pretty good for most guys. Dwight Howard returned. He played 22 minutes, 9-7 with a steal and a block. There'll be better days ahead from Dwight. And Clint Capela went 7-8 and 2 blocks in a bench role behind Dwight. He has value for those blocks and rebounds even in a bench role, but I don't think we need to hold on to him in a 12-team league. Terrence Jones lasted 18 minutes after receiving a cut above his eye. He got some stitches in that. Only played 18 for 4-4. If someone drops Terrence Jones, please jump on him. Yes, he gets injured, but he's still a really good fantasy producer. Montrezl Harrell played 21 minutes in Jones' absence, 17 points. His shooting percentage is through the roof at the moment. He's just a monitor guy at the moment, but let's just see how it all plays out. Ty Lawson with big minutes yet again, 11-4-5. Not a good night, but 36 minutes is something to pay attention to. And Patrick Beverley is not ownable in 12-team leagues anymore if he's only going to be getting 21 or 22 minutes a night. In this rotation, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Sacramento Kings. The Lakers, they got pumped. They allowed 132 points in regulation to the Kings. Jordan Clarkson led the Lakers in scoring, 22-4 with a couple of threes. Roy Hibbert had 5 blocks, 10 points and 5 rebounds, but he played just 21 minutes. I think he'll be better than that for most of the season in terms of his minutes output. Kobe, 13-4-3. D'Angelo Russell, 13-2-2. The minutes were spread all over the place. The highest minutes went to Clarkson at 29. But again, there was a blowout factor in this game. So let's not read a huge amount into Byron Scott being a dick with rotations. He is a dick, and he's got no idea half the time. But let's not blame him too much for this one. The interesting thing comes on the Sacramento Kings side. Rajon Rondo played 24 minutes. And most of you go, oh, that's crap. He played 24 minutes. Collison played 24 minutes. But Rondo went 21-3-8 with a steal and a 3. Rajon Rondo, much like Ricky Rubio the first game, went 9-13 against the Lakers, pretty much shattering any of their shooting records from any season before. He also went 2-2 from the free throw line. He hit a 3. Let's not immediately declare Rondo back to, good pre-ACL Rondo days. It is against the Lakers. The team did put up 132 points. Let's not get too excited. Darren Collison, I still think, is the better player. DeMarcus Cousins, 21-11, didn't hit a 3, disappointingly, had 2 blocks, a good night from him, but everyone wants to talk about Willie Cauley-Stein. 17-9 for Cauley-Stein in his first NBA start, 30 minutes he played, he had 3 blocks and a steal, and everyone's like, do I pick up Willie Cauley-Stein? It's the Lakers. I can't see a situation many times this year where Cauley-Stein plays 30 minutes more than DeMarcus, two more minutes more than DeMarcus Cousins. I don't think that's going to happen very often. He was able to stay out on the court for extended periods of time against a substandard team. It's not going to happen very often. The game before, he played 7 minutes. So let's not get too excited about Cauley-Stein. Yeah, you can add him. Maybe you get some blocks. But this is, there's a massive chance this is his best game for the whole season. I'm not buying too much of the hype on Cauley-Stein at this point. Costa Kufos played 21 minutes, 8-10 with a block, and he's going to continue to get in that range. It's not probably standard league relevant, but it's okay for those deeper leagues because you know he's going to be consistent. Ben McLemore got 25 minutes here. He's droppable pretty much across the board for standard leagues. He had 7 points in his 25 minutes. I really wish that he could get things going. But unfortunately, it feels like that he is stalling in his progress, and the Kings aren't necessarily helping him develop into a future star, which I sort of thought that he had a chance to become. The last game of the night is the Portland Trailblazers and the Phoenix Suns. Damian Lillard, 24-3-6, obliterated your field goal percentage, had 7 turnovers. That's pretty standard for him. CJ McCollum, 16-4-3 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Destroyed your field goal percentage, even worse than Damian Lillard, and there's going to be plenty of nights like that for McCollum as well, but overall, not a bad performance. But I think the performance of the night from the Blazers comes from Al-Farouq Aminu, 16-10, 2 threes, 2 blocks. He was must-own in drafts, he's must-own now, definitely. If he's sitting on your waiver wire, you have to make sure you own him. You're going to get stacks of rebounds, good steals, good blocks, occasional threes. Al-Farouq Aminu must be owned everywhere. Mason Plumlee had a nice night, 15-5 with 3 blocks. Happy with that. And not much else from the other guys. Mo Harkless, Alan Crabb. Myers Leonard struggled with fouls. So when you see Myers Leonard with 0 points in 18 minutes, don't panic too much. He did have 5 fouls. It's not a great night from Leonard, but he will be better than this. I still think that he is a must-own guy as well. Onto the Suns. They were horrible in their first game against Dallas, but all the big names bounced back. 18-4-4 with 3 steals for Knight. 22-2-3 with 2 steals for Bledsoe. 15-13 with a block for Tyson Chandler. Markieff Morris went 13-8 with a 3, a steal, and 2 blocks. So all those guys that had really bad first outings, they bounced back. PJ Tucker didn't. 24 minutes for Tucker, so at least he got some more minutes, but 4-4 and 2 steals. He's not a must-own guy anymore. TJ Warren played only 22 minutes, so it's important to note that Warren actually played less minutes than Tucker. He clearly outperformed him, 17-6 with a 3. Interesting to me with Warren is that the first two games this season, he's hit a 3 in both of them. All of last season, he hit 5 threes total. So has he actually worked on his 3? I didn't see him really taking many threes in summer league. He doesn't look like he's comfortable out there, but he started off the season well. I'm not banking on him continuing to hit threes. What I'm banking on him is to score and to score at a high percentage. He just doesn't do enough in other areas where I think that he is a must-own player. Alex Len also showed us why he is a guy who is, if anything happens to Tyson Chandler, we know that Alex Len is going to be a guy that we're going to make sure he has to be owned in every league. He put up in 19 minutes here, 10-4 with a steal and 2 blocks. Another pretty solid performance from him. All right, that does all of Friday's games. Time for a quick break while we transition into the daily fantasy stuff for Saturday's games. I saw ya. Okay, so the first game we look at for Saturday's games is the New York Knicks and the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are favored by 7.5 points. Which Knicks are we going to see? The ones that had the big opening day blowout of the Bucks, or the ones that got destroyed by the Hawks on the second night? You have to think the Wizards should handle this game pretty comfortably. 7.5 point favorites is a 204-point over-under in this game. Where is the value? Well, injury-wise, there's not much we really need to look at. Martell Webster, he was in today's game. He was out. He was ruled active again. He was ruled inactive. Regardless of what he does, he's not someone we need to pay attention to. And the two Knicks guys that are sort of under question, Kevin Seraphin and Lou Amundson, and they're not going to have too much of an impact on what you do with your daily fantasy lineup. Now, if you want to take a risk in a tournament, Chris Humphries is still only at 4,400. The risk is definitely real, though, with him, as I mentioned before, with that Jared Dudley situation, so don't put him in too many cash lineups. There's a big chance, though, for the Knicks, Jerian Grant starts. He's priced at 4,500. I think he is a tremendous play in both sort of formats. If he starts, there's a chance he gets 30 minutes. I've only got him projected at 29 at the moment, but he's going to put up some pretty nice numbers at that low salary. Robin Lopez at 4,400. Even if he's only getting limited minutes, he's actually getting close to returning that sort of value anyway. And if he plays 28, 29 minutes, we're going to see a much bigger performance. So he's a guy that I look to there. And Kristaps at 4,900, maybe. I think you're going to have better options than Kristaps Porzingis at that price. A couple of Wizards guys, John Wall at 9,600. It's still too expensive for me. He needs to put up really huge numbers to do that. And I'm just, look, against the Knicks, there's a big chance that he does, but it's a lot of money to outlay. And Bradley Beal at 7,200, same sort of situation. I just don't think that he is going to be able to justify that price tag. Another big price guy in this game is Carmelo Anthony at 9,300. He's actually not great value there either. He put up a pretty decent game in the last game for the Knicks, going for 42.9 FanDuel points. But I don't really think I want to spend 9,300 on Carmelo Anthony. I think that for him, again, he's got to return 45 to 50 points to really, you know, break even at that price tag. And I don't know whether he does. Otto Porter's a pretty good defender, and Otto Porter's going to go onto him, and I don't love the situation for him. If I'm spending a big money one out of this game, it is Wall, because he's going to be going up against either Jose Calderon or a rookie Jerian Grant. But still, his price tag is pretty high, that it worries me a little bit. The next game, up on the slate, is the Utah Jazz and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 3.5. There's a very low over under here of 190, so it's going to have a big impact on a lot of these guys. Rodney Hood at 4,300 though is still someone that's worth looking at, but not many other guys really get me too excited. 7,400 for Derek Favors. Yes, he's been really, really good, but can he look? He's averaging over 40 fantasy points. It really depends on the way the Pacers want to run things. I think the Pacers are going to have to go big again here. So we could see Derek Favors matched up against Jordan Hill, which could be great for him. So 7,400, you know, on the surface, it might seem like it's expensive, but he's clearly exceeded that value the first two games. I think he makes a pretty good play. Look, he could also drop off and have a bad night. But if you're matching up against Jordan Hill or maybe even Miles Turner, I think Derek Favors provides a pretty decent amount of value. Guys like George Hill, CJ Miles, Monte Ellis, I'm avoiding all those guys. They've got to try and penetrate against Rudy Gobert, and that's not fun for anybody. Paul George at 8,600. I don't think I want to spend that money on him again. Going up against Favors, going up against Gobert, not a lot to like there. And Gobert at 8,100, no. He had, you know, the six blocks today. That only gave him 35 fantasy points, and that's not enough at $8,000. So I don't really, there's no one I really love in this game, to be honest. Favors is an interesting option. Rodney Hood's not a bad cheap option. And Gordon Hayward, you think, is going to have to bounce back from here. Two subpar performances. But at 7,200, it's a little bit of a risk. The next game up is it's a bit of a weird day in the NBA with all these sort of early season rematches happening already. This game, the next game is the Golden State Warriors and the New Orleans Pelicans, a rematch from opening night. There is no line set for this one, but there is some fantasy value here. Ish Smith at 3,500. Even if Drew Holiday plays and plays 20 minutes, which we expect him to do, Smith still got some decent run in the last game. They did just sign Tony Douglas. I don't imagine Douglas is going to cut into too much of Smith's value. And at minimum salary, I think that you still have to look at using him in tournaments. And even some cash game lineups, he's going to be interesting to look at there. Alexei Yajnica is more a tournament play. He's a minimum salary guy. He's had two really subpar performances. I think he's due for a bit of a bounce back. We need to keep an eye on if Omer Asik plays, though, and Luke Babbitt. They're the two guys who are considered questionable for the Pelicans. If Asik plays, it means that we're taking Yajnica off the board as an option. If Babbitt plays, he doesn't really impact anyone. I like Eric Gordon still at 5,300, and I love Anthony Davis at 11,100. Yes, it's expensive, but he's the guy that I want to spend the money on if I'm spending it. If I'm spending that big money, I don't want Carmelo. I don't want John Wall. Anthony Davis is the guy that I do really like at that price point. Steph Curry at 10,400. He's averaging 51.5 points this season. That's great. Do I want him or Steph? Do I want him or Anthony Davis? I think I do want Anthony Davis still more, but Curry at that price is still pretty good value. It remains to be seen whether he beats his price value again for the third game in a row. There's a decent chance of him doing it, though. I'm avoiding Draymond Green. I'm avoiding Harrison Barnes. I'm avoiding Andre Iguodala. Klay Thompson, I would say that at 7,100, he'd be an okay bet, but just with the way he's played and the back problem, I'm probably steering clear of him as well in this sort of situation. For the Warriors, a couple of cheap big men options. Festus Ezeli replacing Andrew Bogut. He's at 3,500. And Maurice Spates at 3,900. Now, Spates put up 22.3 FanDuel points in the last game in just 13 minutes. He's going to have to play that 13 to 17 minute role again, but he scores at such a ridiculous rate that he can actually put up enough value at that in that time frame to make him a worthwhile investment. So keep a look at Maurice Spates if you need that cheap option at power forward. Speaking of bad games, not that I was, but Brooklyn versus Memphis, this is not something I'm getting excited about at all. Memphis is 12.5-point favorite. The spread is 191.5, the total. A low total, a huge spread. This screams stay away. Courtney Lee at 3,800, though, is not a bad play. And Zach Randolph at 6,800 is also not bad. And I think Marc Gasol at 8,000 is also an okay. But you have to be aware that these guys, they might sit, they might have this game, yeah, they might be 25 up heading into the last quarter and not play the last quarter. So there is definite risk there. But if you think they're going to play, we think that Brooklyn's going to keep it closer than that. Those guys at their value, at their price point, I think make a lot of sense. Mike Conley at 6,400. I don't want to invest in him there. Neither do I want to do that with Jarrett Jack at 6,200. And Brook Lopez going up against Gasol and going up against Zebo. Don't think it's a great situation for him at 7,900. All in all, that game, it's not going to be fun to watch. It's all about whether you think Gasol and Randolph can stay on the court for 30 minutes. Is that enough for them to return their value? And I think that they get at least at 31 to 32 minutes anyway. Next game is Phoenix and Portland. Another one of these rematch games that happened yesterday. We head to Portland for this one. No line is out yet. When we look at this game, I really think that Eric Bledsoe at 7,100 still remains good value, and so does Brandon Knight at 6,400. TJ Warren at 3,900 is a cheap option too. Again, he put up 24.7 points in the last game, and at 3,900, that's enough to clear his value threshold. And Markieff Morris at 5,800, an okay option, not a terrible option. On the Portland side of things, I look for Myers Leonard to bounce back at 5,000 and Mason Plumlee at 5,000. I think are both okay options for tournaments. I don't really know that you want to look at them in cash games. Whereas CJ McCollum at 6,000, I think that he makes a pretty much a common sense move at the shooting guard position in cash and in tournament games. Al-Farouq Aminu, same at 5,200. I think he's pretty rock solid at that price point. You can get some bigger games from him. Don't expect huge performances, but he's a pretty solid contributor. Damian Lillard comes in at 9,100. I don't know. He had only 29.6 points in the last game against Phoenix. It's a lot to spend. I would probably want to spend that money in other places. The last game is another one of these rematch games. It's the Sacramento Kings taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. No line is available for this game as of yet. JJ Redick, I still think he's underpriced at 4,800. He hasn't been able to reach that threshold yet, but I think that he's got a chance to do that here. In a tournament, if you're looking for a cheap guy, Omri Caspi. He played 22 minutes in the last game and had 25.8 fantasy points. He's averaging 20.8 in 21 minutes this season, and at 3,900, that's pretty significant. Chris Paul at 9,400 is an expensive option that I like. I would rather spend 9,400 on Chris Paul than what I would on, say, John Wall. Even though Paul was a little bit disappointing last game, I think he'll be looking to really, really stretch it and put up some pretty decent numbers. Boogie Cousins at 10,900 and Blake Griffin now up at 10,000. They're okay. You know you're going to get 40 points from them, but are you going to get 50? That's where the issue comes in. You probably won't get 50. Willie Cauley-Stein is up to $5,000, and yes, at $5,000, he clearly smashed that in the last game, but he was well under it in the first game. You can take a risk and see exactly what we get. We don't even know if he's going to start. Are they going to go back to the same lineup they ran in the first game against the Clippers, where Kufos and Cousins played? That's the risk with Cauley-Stein, and that's something you'd have to monitor close to tip-off, but if we assume they're going back to that similar lineup that they ran in the first game, then it's not a great sort of situation for Cauley-Stein. Not many other guys I really want to talk about here. I think DeAndre Jordan is rock solid at 7,700. Rajon Rondo at 5,100 is still a really cheap price. As much as I don't like Rajon Rondo, I think that's still a pretty decent price for a tournament. Let's look at some good plays for Saturday. Ish Smith at 3,500. And again, if you don't know how I'm doing this, what I do is each position, I give you a cheap option, a mid-price option, and expensive option who I think are going to give you a pretty good return on your investment. Ish Smith at 3,500. Brandon Knight at 6,400 as a point guard. and Chris Paul at 9,400. For the shooting guard position, JJ Redick, I think at 4,800 is a nice cheap option. Eric Bledsoe at 7,100. And there are no shooting guards priced over 7,500 on the slate for Saturday. At small forward, TJ Warren, 39. Al-Farouq Aminu, 5,200. And then Rudy Gay at 79. I've talked about most of those guys. Power forward, Maurice Spates, 3,900. Zach Randolph, 6,800. And Anthony Davis, 11,100. Whereas at center, Festus Ezeli is a really great cheap option at 35. Mason Plumlee at 5. And then Marc Gasol at 8,000 makes up the list of my plays for the day. All right, that does it for today's show. Again, don't forget to check out hardwoodparoxysm.com, basketballmonster.com, redrockbasketball.com, and allstar5.com. I'm all over the place this year, so check out all those websites. And look at, I'm not telling you to go and get memberships to these things, but if you don't know what Basketball Monster is, there's a stack of stuff that happens over there, up to the minute daily projections that myself and Kyle McEwen are handling. Forums, season-long stuff, trade analyzers. There's a whole heap of stuff over at Basketball Monster. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at redrock_bball, where you can tweet me any of your questions, of course. Stay tuned on Basketball Monster as well. There's going to be an article coming out in the next day or so, the Week 2 Primer, looking at the Week 2 schedule, free agents to pick up, hot free agents, storylines for the week, all that sort of stuff. So check that out. That article will be coming pretty soon. All right, I think we're done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.